Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Happy Veterans Day to all those who have served our nation as well as their families. You obviously have sacrificed greatly for our nation as well. And please take this day and know that we certainly honor you here both at Radio America, National Review, and the Three Martini Lunch. In for Jim Garrity today is Charlie Cook of National Review. Charlie, welcome back as always.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And we start with the good, and that comes to us thanks to the good folks from the Pew Research Center in a piece written by Andrew Kohut. The essential thesis here, Charlie, is that Republicans, there was a lot of hand-wringing after the shutdown theater, and a lot of the polls suggested that Republicans were at all-time lows in popularity. To some extent, that is accurate, but what a lot of Republicans did not take into consideration is that Democrats are also exceedingly unpopular. The Pew survey shows that Republicans are still, by 7 points, 44 to 37, considered more competent to handle the economy. Among independents, it's a 46 to 30 margin. They also point out that President Obama's approval rating is essentially in the tank at 42%. And with Obamacare fumbling in the rollout as it is right now, there's plenty of optimism for the GOP and conservatives in particular.
Yes, and there should be. I was a huge critic, as you know, of the shutdown. I thought the tactics were myopic. I thought the right in some regards behaved like the left. If we just want it enough, if we just push through, then the American people will suddenly come to our side and justice will ring out. And that was clearly not going to happen. But I felt somewhat optimistic since, and I didn't really pay too much attention to the numbers, the GOP popularity numbers, for a couple of reasons, really. And I think this Pew poll demonstrates that, which is that the number that really matters in midterms, at least historically, has been the president's. And the president now is where George Bush was at this point, lower in some regards. The Republican number of approval doesn't really translate to any races, and it's not a presidential election coming up. It's a bunch of disparate, diffuse races. Also, the Obamacare rollout was being ignored because of the shutdown, which I thought was a mistake, but you know, you could see this coming. Conservatives have been warning about this for a long time. And finally, and this is also a problem for Republicans, but it's a good foundation. Finally, if you look at the exit polls from the 2012 election, people already trusted the Republican Party on most of these questions. Where Romney got hammered was, I think, the question I think Mitt Romney cares about people like me. Now, I think it's fairly terrible that we live in a society in which that question matters, but we do. He certainly didn't get hammered on things like the economy and healthcare and defense and so forth. And so, you know, if there was already a belief that the Republican Party was stronger on these questions than the Democratic Party, goodness knows what this Obamacare rollout has done. And I think that's what you're seeing. I think if conservatives play their cards right, they can have a good year.
Also, in this survey by Pew, the Democrats right now, or at least in mid-October, had a 6-point edge in the generic House contest. Would you vote for a Republican or a Democrat for the House? It was 49-43, which is still pretty darn close. We've seen it more lopsided than that. And among independents, it's 43-43. And if Obamacare continues to roll out anywhere close to the way that it has, and there's no reason to think that it won't even get more nightmarish, Charlie, I think the numbers will change even more.
Well, if you look at the number of people who've had their health policy canceled, you could actually see an election turning on it. My instinct, regardless of the policy, is that the people who are being helped by Obamacare either didn't vote or already voted Democratic, and that even if they were Republicans, they're unlikely to change their vote to a Democrat in 2014, maybe 2016. But there must be an awful lot in the middle, and it is the middle class that is getting particularly hurt by this, who are now saying, well, I voted maybe for Obama, maybe I voted for a Democrat for the Senate, but I'm not doing it again, not if they're in favor of this, because I've seen my premiums go up. 15 million cancellations. The last election came down to, I think it was about 3 million, and in truth, it was actually around 600,000 if you look at the way that the four states swung. I think as long as they don't go off message, as long as they don't ridiculously shut down the government again over nothing, then they can have an extremely good year.
All right, on to the bad martini, and this is in a especially appropriate one today for Veterans Day. There are a number of reports out, Charlie, talking about what phenomenal strides the Veterans Administration has made. And I guess compared to what they had been doing on a level of competence that ought to shock the conscience. They are doing better than they were about 8 months ago. At the worst point in March, the number of backlogged veterans' disability claims, and backlog means hasn't been answered for 125 days, was at 600,000. It's now down to 411,000. But all of that doesn't even factor in the complex maze and frustration of bureaucracy once the VA actually does respond to your claim. And of course, the VA, as well as Medicare and so forth, is a great precursor of where some folks would like to take our entire healthcare system. But the more immediate issue is hundreds of thousands of veterans are waiting and waiting and waiting for essential services from our government here. And other reports are suggesting, at least in New York City, that a huge number of our vets can't even get enough proper nutrition. So one of the things that government is supposed to do is take care of those who have worn the uniform and borne the scars of battle. And it seems like the effort to make good on that promise is not going very well.
No, I think the first thing I would say on this, just to make sure I'm clear, is that nobody on the conservative side begrudges the notion that if you've served your country in the way that veterans have, you should be taken care of. You know, there's sometimes an instinct on the left to say that it's hypocritical for conservatives to be against welfare and government organization and so forth when they want the VA to exist. But I don't think that there is ideologically. Having said that, just because conservatives want the VA to exist and veterans to be looked after, and indeed they want the army to exist as well, doesn't mean that it's any good. Unfortunately, the VA is a perfect example of why conservatives are, for example, so implacably opposed to single payer. And I always say this to people as coming from a country which has single payer, in fact has nationalized socialized medicine, not just single payer. If you think your insurance company is bad, and if you think that they ration your care, if you think that they are too difficult and bureaucratic to deal with, just imagine what it would be like if they were replaced by the government. We don't really have to imagine that, because unfortunately, we can look at the VA and we can see what that is. And yes, that's a huge improvement to go from 600,000 to 411,000, but it's still not good enough. No private company would ever survive if they said, well, we've gone from 600,000 to 411,000, so you should leave us alone. And my instinct here is my instinct in general, which is government should do some things and it should do them well. But when the government does so much, as it does now, when it has such a sprawling role in public life, it sometimes is unable to do the things that it should do well. And veterans should really be a priority. If the government sent them to war, the government is on the hook to look after them. This is probably a wake-up call, as it should have been for the last 30 years, really. This is a wake-up call that you can't have everything you want, and prioritizing some things over another is necessary. So let's be realistic about what resources we have and how we're going to spend them.
Well, speaking of the military, our Crazy Martini is sort of in that vein as well. In addition to the Veterans Day observances today, of course, there's been this, you've seen salute to service in the NFL, and then certain college teams are taking on a patriotic component for specific games as well. This coming Saturday, Northwestern University will wear much different uniforms in honor of those who have served. And so they will be wearing uniforms that depict the American flag and don't really make much mention of the fact that they're playing for Northwestern. Some folks think that that's desecrating the flag and so forth. So there's been a controversy. So it came up on the ESPN program Around the Horn, which is essentially a moderator and four sports pundits who jawbone about the different topics of the day. The first person who was asked about this said that, well, it is disturbing, but war is disturbing, so my biggest problem is that it doesn't say Northwestern on the jersey. Then the issue came to Kevin Blackistone, and in the segment that they did this in is called Buy or Sell. So when he says sell, he's opposed to the idea of Northwestern wearing these uniforms, but he takes it a whole lot further than just one game and one set of uniforms.
You should also be selling the rest of the military symbolism, embrace of sports, whether it's the singing of a war anthem to open every game, whether it's going to get a hot dog and being able to sign up for the Army at the same time, whether it's the NFL's embrace of the mythology of the Pat Tillman story. It's been going on in sports since the first national anthem was played in the World Series back in 1917, and it's time for people
Kevin,
to back
there's away. There's a difference, though, between calling a football game a battle, right, and then singing the national anthem before a game.
It is. You are conflating a war anthem with a simple game. And when you have military flyovers and all the other military symbolism that goes on in sports, I think you've got a problem.
Charlie, as someone born in a different country, but very much respectful of America's heritage, I'd love to get your insights on this one.
Well, I don't really know what the problem is. He never says. He never explains why it's problematic. He just says that it is. He is right to say that they are conflated. In fact, linguistically, we do this an awful lot. We talk about politics in this way as well, because politics is the absence of violence. That's why we have Congress. It's why we have votes. If we didn't have Congress and votes, we'd be shooting each other to resolve disputes, as British kings did for an awful long time. And in fact, then the whole world did, and in some places still does. So instead of actually killing each other, for example, we say that there's a campaign season. We talk about the battleground states. We talk about victory and loss. And we have constructed this whole world to avoid us killing each other. And sports are broadly the same thing. There is a competitive instinct in human beings, which has to be expressed somehow. And it is an awful lot better for it to be expressed in young men playing football, for example, than it is with them killing each other, maiming each other, or robbing a bank. And so to appropriate these ideas and put them onto a football game seems to me not only not to be problematic, but actually to be rather good. And it's also worth saying that really America does have a virtuous, and I say this as a Brit, where we seem to have lost a lot of respect for our military and armed forces, a virtuous and healthy respect for the military. And one of the ways in which that is expressed without intruding on people's lives like they would in a North Korea and doing it in school every day or coming to people's houses or asking them just to watch parades through the street, there's a sort of focal point of that at sports games. You see it in baseball with the singing of the national anthem. You see it at the Super Bowl with the planes going over. And I don't think that's a negative thing at all, especially in this case when it is actually a celebration of America.
It's just hard to believe that people have a problem with the national anthem before a sporting event. I don't think anybody's specifically comparing the attack on Fort McHenry and the American holding off of the British to be the equivalent of a Sunday afternoon in the NFL, for example.
Rewriting history and trying to adjust everything that is from the past to our contemporary life is never a particularly attractive trait. I mean, the British national anthem, for example, has a whole verse about killing the Scots. Now, I don't want to go and kill the Scots, and I'm not particularly keen on the idea of anyone else doing so. But nonetheless, that is our national anthem, and it was written to reflect real historical events and an animosity that still exists in small part, but that was brutal until 1707. You know, the American national anthem was forged in battle. There's really no good saying that we've somehow evolved past this. We'd have to get rid of all of our books. We'd have to get rid of all of our museums as well. I would imagine most Americans are much too sensible to even countenance or be worried by that.
Well, let's certainly hope so. Once again, happy Veterans Day, and thank you to all our vets, Charlie. Always great to have you with us. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Charlie Cook of National Review in for Jim Garrity. Jim will be back on Tuesday. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.